Who are you?
Tim Callender.
Summer Brooks.
Brett Filipek.
We host the Babylon podcast.
What do you want?
To study and discuss the Babylon 5 universe.
Where are you going?
To discover every scrap of B5 memorabilia.
Who do you serve, and who do you trust?
And welcome back to another Babylon podcast. I'm Summer Brooks, and we have I have emergency subs coming up from the minor leagues today.
Yes, I'm here. This is Gary. I sent both Tim and Brett down to the planet to go look for the cure while we have fun up here still on the ship. Suckers.
Hey, it's their loss. They miss out on chatting with another Crusade cast member, but you know, we have more lined up, so it's good.
Oh, you've been really hitting it out of the park with some of these interviews lately. I'm glad I'm able to participate in one of them this time around.
Thank you. It's trying to get everybody I can. Working very hard on both Gary Cole and Daniel Day-Kim, and not getting answers is a little frustrating, but...
You know, they always forget their breakthrough rules.
So. Luckily, I have a stubborn side.
I got you. Well, if we want to cover just a touch of news really quick, I'm an avid tweeter in as things go, and JMS just officially became a tweeter as well.
I saw that.
Yeah, he was concerned about forgeries and stuff like that. After all, anybody could go on Twitter and pick a handle and throw up a picture of anyone in a sense, so you always have to wonder sometimes, is this the real person? And he wanted to address the same concern, so now it's Straczynski is his tweet handles for people who want to go follow him. You know, he's already been posting a little bit, and some of the stuff is pretty darn humorous. He's got quite a sense of humor, as we well know. So I look forward to his posts over upcoming. So
yeah, same here. I followed him from Babylon Podcast and said, "Welcome to the show." what else? We have other news. Saw sad news. Jeff Conway's in the hospital again.
Oh, I felt such heartache as you follow his story over the past few years. You know,
yeah.
That you know, just nothing. You know, even nothing seems to be going his way. Even from when he was in the publicized, was it celebrity? It was an intervention. I forget what it was, and that celebrity rehab that our own Jeffrey was one of the co-producers or something like that with it. And you know, you just keep hearing worse and worse things when it comes to his health. So we wish him well, of course, but I don't know how much longer he'll be be active from the sad turns he's taking. So
yeah, and I saw another B5 fan tweeted today that. Tweeted that today would have been Andreas Katsoulis' 65th birthday. And I was like, wow, really? And it just you forget how young these guys were when they passed away.
I know Andreas is the type of person, and no offense meant, but he looks so much older than he actually was that it's hard when you saw that 65, it's like, wow, really? And then it makes you, mourn his loss even more to realize how young he was when he had actually passed.
Yeah, because there was, what was it? There was a movie that came out in the 90s, in the mid-90s. He was a mobster, and Patrick Swayze was a cop, and he looked older in that movie.
I'll attribute it to makeup. He looked so good in it.
He was still very imposing. He just looked older, so...
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. And well, the good thing about that movie was Ben Stiller got killed, so hey.
What a silver lining to have in a movie. Yeah. Well, to turn it to happier notes, as we're recording this, the second Other Voices book for Crusade was dropped. It's available to the public, so I'm looking forward to that. I saw some of the teasers that they put out with the, I'll call it the ad for it. And, you know, there's some, you know, new scripts as well as JMS discussing in the Other Voices books, which he doesn't typically do, one of the scripts that comes up, and as well as a bunch more of the drawings or sketches for, I believe, the Excalibur Hangar Bay with all the Thunderbolts, I believe, were tasked on those, or Star Furies, depending on, I guess, which special effects they wanted to put in that week.
Yeah, and I saw that Peter David has an introduction detailing all of the stuff that was left out of the final versions of Ruling from the Tomb. That is what I want to get my hands on, and I think it'd be safe to say that Tim would also be eager to read through that.
Oh no, yeah, no, I can't wait to get my hands on it. I already put my order in, and usually they deliver it pretty quickly, all things said and done. So I'll probably have it usually within a few days. Although it's not easy to wait that long, I often get anxious about such things and look forward to it. So.
I just don't know. I don't have time to read through these books as quickly as I want to. And yet I know as soon as I have the book in my hand, I'll probably tear the shrink wrap off of it about 10:30 at night. And then, you know, when I feel my eyes crusting over and I realize that it's 4 a.m.
And that's when I wake up and see you on Twitter. But anyway, but no, I know I was looking through Other Voices myself, and they have some of the different script versions, you know, not just the changes that Jan so meticulously goes through and tracks, but they actually have the full versions of some of the alternate scripts. And I say, oh, I'll just glance over them, or I'll check, you know, Jan's, you know, what the changes were. But then I say, oh, let me just take a look quick. And then before I know it, I'm read through every version of the script anyway. But yeah, I know it's really fun. It's, you know, reading presents in episodes in ways that the watching it on the TV screen just doesn't do. So it's not quite new shows, but you get something out of it that you don't watching it on TV.
And the thing is like, even with the other drafts or the changes in what's in there between like what made it, what got cut from the final one and what's in there, I can still run what I'm reading through my head so that it plays like an episode in my head.
Yeah, very well put. Very well put.
So much Crusade stuff left to go through, so little time. We're not getting any more Other Voices books, right? We're just getting
regular. I believe this finishes the Other Voices for Crusade, then we still have, I'm not sure how many, honestly. I think the number at one time, I think, was somewhere around 3, but I thought they've pushed it up to 4 with What the Hell Happened. But I guess Jason or Jan would have to confirm that bit. I'm not clear how many there are, because the number did change at some point.
I believe, yeah, Jason is saying there will be 4 What the Hell Happened books.
Yay!
Jason, will we get the 4th volume by Christmas?
He won't tell you. They're so tight-lipped, they make the PsyCor look like Blabbermouth.
Oh, nicely done, nicely done. Well, as soon as we know, you'll know, as always. We're going to take a really quick break and come back with our chat with Carrie Dubrow.
Oh, I can't wait. This should be fun.
Hi, this is Kevin Batchelder. And this is the Saturday B Movie Reel.
Do something. Shoot it! Shoot it!
That about describes it, yeah.
All right, everybody stay here.
We look specifically at the Sci-Fi Channel's original movies. You know the ones. The ones that air on Saturday night.
Be known throughout the ages as an instant classic.
We need a bigger gator!
limb cutting yes. and blood squirting from...
Flying limbs, I called it in my notes.
What could go wrong?
We look on a regular basis at the movies as they come out, and since there have been over 200 of them, we do go back and look at many of them that are now out on DVD. By this point, I had completely forgotten any semblance of seeing if this actually makes any sense from a plot point of view. So come on by, get involved, and have some fun.
Check us out at SaturdayBMovieReel.com.
Our future depends on it. Make it safe.
Oh, I love your opening.
And we're back with more Babylon Podcast. I'm Summer Brooks.
And I'm Gary from Jacksonville.
And our very, very special guest today is Carrie Dobro. Everyone knows her from the enticingly sexy, intriguing, and mysterious portrayal of our favorite thief, Doreen in the Feel.
Hello.
Come on. You had fun playing that role, even though they had to paint you into the leather, right?
Oh, honey, it took three people to get me in that little puppy. You have no idea. That was sort of a spray paint outfit.
Oh.
It's always good when they take your boobs from your knees and stick them up to your chin. It's a good look. It worked for me.
So what was the most fun you remember about playing Doreena?
Oh, my goodness. There was just so many great things about her. She just got to do everything. She, you know, she got to kick ass, which is always a good time. Some of the fun things I remember, one of the funniest things I remember is there was a scene where David and I had to do this dance. I don't know if you remember. I forget what it was. It made it into the opening credits, actually. And David was very, very nervous about it, so much so that, you know, we went and we hired a guy and we worked in the studio in Santa Monica rehearsing and practicing. And it was just so much fun to do, and it just made me laugh. It made him laugh, and it actually turned out really well. That was a good time.
Yeah, we talked to him a few weeks ago about that. He said it was very intimidating because you were the dancer and he wasn't.
Yeah, but he did great. I mean, he really did great. He looked like a complete pro.
With all the stuff that happened with Crusade, the hiatuses and things of that nature, do you look back on it as a favorable experience to you that you enjoyed doing it?
It was the best. I got to tell you, it was a very... very, very special experience for me, and I have nothing negative to say about any of it except that it ended. I mean, it was the best cast, the best crew, the best creative team put together. It was just fucking fun. I mean, besides getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning, walking the dog, and driving to work, she was very confused by that. But there was nothing negative about this experience. It was probably one of the best things I've ever done, I would have to say. And it was very, very sad when it ended. Because it didn't end based on its merit, you know? It didn't end because the show didn't work. It ended for stupid reasons that were stupid. They were stupid then, they're stupid now.
You can blame TNT, we do.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah, I mean, just ridiculous. And it's a shame because if, you know, there were some other networks that were bidding on the show, you know, when Babylon ended and Crusade was starting. And if we'd gone to Sci-Fi, if we'd gone to probably any other network, we might still be, you know, we would have had a nice run on the air. And, you know, we were the guinea pigs. TNT had never done a series before, an original series. And all of a sudden it was like, oh, well, what is this beast? We don't really know. So we're going to change what's already working and try to make it something else. And I guess it just got behind closed doors. It just got crazy because I must say that they really coddled us. You know, I didn't really know all that much that was going on and sort of how intense it was. And I think that was a good thing because we were still working. And I think they really took great care in making sure that we were happy and working and not stressed about, you know, all the stuff that was going on behind the scenes. Although I must tell you, we came back from that unexpected hiatus and all of a sudden somebody told me, oh, so here's the change with Doreena. She's going to have sex with everybody on every planet that she goes to. And I was like, wow, that's a departure. Instead of beating them up, she'll just have sex. Wow, okay. Good luck getting that outfit off. That's all I gotta say. It's like it was just so not her, you know. Clearly they did not get it at all.
So the production staff kept everybody pretty much insulated from the wranglings going on with the the studio.
Yeah, really they did. And I thought that was wonderful because we did not get caught up in any shenanigans or anything. And I lived my life fairly oblivious. So there was probably other people in the cast that knew what was going on and I didn't. But that was okay with me. You know, I thought their choice to take great care with us, was sort of the right decision.
So. We've talked to Margene Holden and David Allen Brooks so far, and each of them, and including Peter Woodward, had something creative to contribute to the Crusade story. Did you ever get bitten by the "I want to write a story" bug?
I did not. I mean, I had. You know, Joe is an amazing writer, especially for women. You know, he writes women that are strong characters, and I think that's why I think I've done so much sci-fi, because there are no preconceptions about what gender has power or has status or how they should act. And so if you look at most sci-fi, the women are really strong. They're leaders, they're powerful, and so a lot of the best roles for women these days are sci-fi. And Dorina was very... You know, she had a chip on her shoulder the size of Wisconsin, which is a fairly large state. But there were levels to her that we were just sort of starting to get into. And I think she had a great humor and great vulnerability. And you saw little bits of vulnerability in scenes with Peter and with Gary, really not with anybody else. But her humor is where sort of I wanted to lighten her up a little bit and find... just more levels with her. You know, she was already an action hero. I already kicked everybody's ass. So, you know, I didn't want that. And I don't think I was going to get really smart very fast, you know. So I was very happy with her development. I was very happy with where she was going.
Oh, I agree. You could definitely see the seeds where they were going to develop her character further if had these seasons progressed longer. You know, obviously her... talks with Galen to try and learn more about the Technomage end, as well as her her budding friendship with Gideon. You really get that sense that they were pushing you as a character out to really grow. In a lot of ways, I'd like to think of Crusade as Dorina's story to a large extent, because she seems to, you know, be such a focus and such an agent of change in the show.
Yeah, I would agree, and I think the relationship with Gary Call, the relationship with Gideon, was really quite special, quite lovely, and I would love to have nurtured that and seen where it would go, because it wasn't a traditional, you know, with Galen it was very much, you know, sort of almost like teacher student, almost, you know, teach me your wisdom. But with Gary sort of got through, with Gideon, got through her chip more than anybody else on the ship. And they had this little spark, you know, things like when they were playing cards or on the bridge, little things that sort of were little sparks between the two of them. I don't mean romantic sparks. I mean just sort of deeper understandings between the two of them. That would have been very cool to see where that went.
Where do you think those connections came from? What do you think Dorina and Gideon had in common that made those moments for them to bond easier?
That's a really good question, and I don't know that I've ever thought about that. I think I think because he was the one who sort of made the initial overture to a friendship to her. I also think, boy, you know, it's a really good question. I don't know why. well said, Carrie. I don't know why.
I've just been thinking a lot about the connections between the characters, just going through, watching all the episodes again, talking, literally going deeper than I'd ever gone into them before. And it dawned on me when we were watching Path of Sorrows that there could be a little bit of survivor's guilt connection between the two of them.
And yes, actually, that's a brilliant sort of intuition. Yeah.
And I would have liked to have seen where that would have gone, because both their characters were still healing from that. They were still trying to move on with their lives, even though it was informing their current actions in the series. And like I've said before many, many times, I rail at the universe that this was taken away from us so damn soon.
I know, you and me both, sister.
Oh my god!
I totally agree, but that's very insightful, and I think there's a lot of truth to what you just said. I think that survivor's guilt is, I mean, that's sort of what drives Dorina's entire existence up to the point where we saw her, you know. And I think that perhaps that connection with Gideon allowed her maybe to express that or wear that or have a vulnerability of that connection of understanding with him that she didn't have with anybody else, and maybe probably would have helped her get past to the other side of that. Because I think she would have. I totally think she would have been driven, you know, by more than just, I want to kill every drop on the planet or universe, as it were. You know?
I have a question. And, you know, how did... Yeah. Oh, go ahead. No, you go ahead.
No, after you. No, really, after you.
I was curious how you got into the B5 universe in general. Was it just a cold casting call? Did you know somebody who knew somebody? How did that come about?
You know, I'm trying to think. So I did two guest star, little co-star things actually on Babylon as other characters. And I think the first one I did, I was actually, it's the one and only time I've ever been human. And I was a med tech.
Yes, you were a doctor, yeah.
With Rick
and Jeffrey, yeah. I believe.
Yeah. And for that one, it was fascinating. I didn't know anybody, but I just went in on a general call. And the thing that I love about sci-fi, and the thing that I thought was so cool right from the get-go, was that there were four people to callbacks at producers, and one was me, and one was a small Asian woman, and one was a large black man, and one, you know what I mean? We were as different as could be, so they were clearly not looking for type. And I thought, you know what? This is cool, because every other show I've ever been on that was not sci-fi, it's all about type.
Yeah, woman 18 to 25. Dark hair.
Yeah, you know, and I also done another series before Babylon 5. I did Hypernauts.
Now, I look at that show, and I see so many Babylon 5 names going in there. Everyone from Ron Thornton to Larry DiTilio, even...
yes, well, it was Ron Thornton's show. Patter. He was the co-creator of that show.
And that was running at about, actually, almost in parallel to Babylon 5. They were running about the same time, around, I think, 96, 97, somewhere around there.
95, I think I did. I think I did Hypernauts 95 and 96.
Okay, because B5 started 94. Was there some sort of synergy between those two shows in a sense that, you know, you were on one, you go to the other, vice versa for you?
No, it wasn't actually. But I had done, boy, now I can't remember. Maybe you know. But did I do the first Doctor thing in Babylon before Hypernauts? Because I can't remember. Because I don't think I had done Hypernauts before I went there.
I couldn't find more than just a 96 date in general. So that's why I was curious where, if there was any sort of, oh, she was good on here or got recommended or something along those lines.
No, that sort of happened with Dorina. You know, when I went in for Dorina, I was at the very, very end of the casting process for that. They had been casting Dorina for a month. And I was like, I heard about it. And I was saying to my agent, you got to get me in there. They did not call me for it. You know, I didn't know John Copeland. I didn't know JMS. You know, they had nothing to do with Hypernauts. But I was like, you got to get me in there because I knew she was me. And I finally did. And it was great. It's like I went in to producers. It's very interesting because it was, you want to hear the stupid story?
Go for it.
Okay. Because we love stupid. So it was my brother's wedding in Tennessee. And it was his rehearsal weekend. And you know how actors are. It's like, oh, I got a really important audition. And we, you know, sort of cancel our life in the hopes that we'll actually get a job. So I think I went for the call like on a Wednesday. And they said, I get a call on Thursday saying you're going to go to network on Friday. So I call my dad, and I was supposed to be flying to Tennessee on Friday, and I'm like, you know, I have a third callback, and I'm going to network, and they're only bringing two people, and I really think I need to stay and do this. And he's like, oh, it's just going to be like everything else. But, I'll, you know, that, you know, Jewish guilt, we're very big on that in my family. Oh, if you think you need to, but don't miss the wedding. I'm not going to miss the wedding, Dad. I'll be there for the wedding. Well, I don't know how it's going to. I'll fly out on Saturday. He's not getting married to Saturday night, Dad. Just relax. Okay, but, you know, it's got a rehearsal. I'm sending my husband. He'll stand in for me. Oh, it's not the same. Okay. So I was like, oh, Jesus, I better get this now because otherwise I've got no excuse. So I went in on Friday. And it's very nerve-wracking going into network because it's just you and 30 people that sit around a lot of tables and they don't say boo to you. And you walk in and you do your little thing and you leave and you're like, okay, well, how'd that go? No response. And then I got in the car from the studio, and I was driving back over the hill, and I got a call, like 45 minutes after the network audition, and it was a big, you know, it was a big thing for me. It was fantastic. Of course, the first thing I had to do was call my dad and go, see? I was totally
give it
worth
right
it.
Back,
see?
Jill. Yeah.
So, what was it in the description of Darina that you read that just clicked with you, that said, this is my character, this is me, I have to play her?
You know, A, strong woman character. B, she kicked ass. It's like, she is power. She was powerful. She was powerful. She was multifaceted. You know, what I read for was A Call to Arms. It was a Babylon 5, you know, A Call to Arms that introduced my character and Galen's character. And that was a great script. I thought that was a great script. And I fell in love with this character. And I was like, this is me. Plus, I'd just done a series where my whole world was dead. Because I think in Hypernauts, Kulai was my name. And I was the spiritual leader of my people, but my world was dead. Does that sound familiar?
Yeah, very similar roles. when I was looking over that, I was like,
she wasn't violent.
Yeah, Soul Survivor.
Yeah, I know. She wasn't violent, though. But clearly, any sci-fi show I am in, my people are dead. Because I think in every show I say, my world is dead. It's like, honey, we got it. You don't have to tell us in every episode. But it's a dream. It's a dream for an actress to play a strong character. You know, and I think, it's interesting when... we did our first episode or first couple of episodes of Crusade, and I didn't hear anything from Joe. And I was like, oh, I don't know. So I sort of walked into his office and I went, how am I doing? You know, actors are so insecure, but it's like you're starting something new. And it's like, am I doing it right? Am I doing it wrong? And he said, if you don't hear from me, that's a good thing. He said, I cast you all, but I cast you because you are the part. So if you hear from me, things aren't going well. I went, okay, bye-bye. I hope to not talk to you soon.
And we've heard so many other actors basically give the exact same interchange between JMS and themselves when they come in, question them. You'll know when you're doing something wrong. Just go with it otherwise.
Exactly. And I think that's a testament to them because they really spend a lot of time casting. And if you cast right, then you have a show that works. And he did. He does. He's brilliant.
I wanted to switch tracks for a second, if we could, over to talk about the prosthesis that you had on, the makeup. We've talked
which version?
Well, that's a good question, too. Well, we talked with Julie Caitlin Brown, and she had major issues, as is pretty common among fandom to know, with the heavy makeup on her, skin breaking out, things of that nature. How was your experience with the actual makeup itself before we talk about the different versions that you went through?
You know, I didn't mind the makeup, actually. This one was, it was not so bad. The only time I managed, it took 3 hours to get on, but I managed to get it off in about 20 minutes. I just ripped that stuff off my head. The only part that was, sometimes the detach all, you know, the stuff that they take off the prosthetics with can get a little irritating to the skin. But, you know, it was just the forehead, so it wasn't so bad. And, you know, they were quite lovely. They, what kind of skin product do you want? We'll buy it for you. And they did. And, you know, it wreaks a little havoc, but I didn't find it so bad. I think it was harder for me to get used to all the contacts than it was the prosthetics. You know, at that point, it was so much less prosthetics than the other series I had done, where I had five different prosthetic pieces. You know, Dorina just had a forehead patch. Still took ages to put on, but you know what I mean? It didn't seem like all that much.
Did you have to go through different types of contact lenses before you found something that worked with you?
Okay, here's let's talk. Shall we talk? Let's share about my lenses. Okay.
Like the bits, yeah.
So we're doing the call to arms, and I go see the fancy Beverly Hills, you know, oh, I do contacts for Buffy and for all the major, you know, shows and movies in town. I'm like, great. We're trying in all this stuff that a little bit is scary because some of them are metal and they're scratching, whatever, but he's great, and he finds something that we think everybody likes. And then we go, and it's the day before we're shooting and we're on set and we're just going through costume and doing makeup tests and whatever. And they look at my eyes and they're like, oh, those aren't the right eyes. Oh, well, that's what I got. Oh, well, we're shooting tomorrow and these won't work. So when we did a call to arms, I wore two contacts in each eye. To give them what they wanted. And I was like, okay, this is killing me. It was just, I don't wear contacts. So wearing one pair was kind of awkward, and wearing two was like, I felt like, you know, those cartoons where your eyes sort of bug out of your head. That's what I felt like walking around.
And then you have
that
to
was
act.
Harder for me.
Wow.
Yeah. And then somewhere after, I think after a call to arms or in the middle of it, probably after it for continuity, I got a different pair, and then I got a third pair. And I liked my eyes. I thought they were really cool. And I did get used to wearing them. They were soft. They weren't so bad. But the two in an eye, that was a little much.
I had no idea. That's, did you get hazard?
Oh, honey, stick with me. I've got some trivial facts for you.
Did you get hazard pay? Did you get hazard pay for the double contacts?
Did I have to pay for it?
No, did you get hazard pay for wearing double contacts?
No, but I think I got something extra special on the craft service tray. Nice. And that's almost as good. And yet, not so much.
So what other costume or prop trivia can you tell us?
Well, one of the cool things is first of all, let's go back to the prosthetics. So in a call to arms, I don't know if you remember what I looked like in that, but I had a forehead piece that made me look like Frankenstein. It was huge, and it had all the, you know, the scales on it. It was so big that it was like way bigger than my head. So then I had that fake piece of hair that sort of went around it. Not attractive, not a good look at all. So then they took that away, and then I had a second prosthetic piece, and then I had a third prosthetic piece. By the time I got to the third one, I quite liked it, and I had all my own hair.
I thought you got better looking as the series went on. But
well, yes. Hello. Special effects is magic. That's what I'm saying. Other fun things. Okay, so in A Call to Arms, I don't know if you remember that scene when I walk through the airport security and I take out like 55 items of destruction. Okay, that was one of my most favorite things. And the guy who made our some of our weapons made something for me and gave it to me actually at the end of the show, one of those, it could kill you, but it's beautifully made and I do have it in my house. That was always fun, my weapon of choice. Other than that, I don't think I really had a lot of weapons in Crusade.
I had heard at some point you were supposed to get a big sword.
Yes. I was like, not a big stick because Galen had that. But yes, I was supposed to. Jim, Joe actually told me about that. I was supposed to get this sort of pretty special sword, but of course, I never got it.
Oh.
I know it's. I'm trying to move on with my life. 11 years later, it's tough.
Oh, yeah. No, that scene in where you're de-arming yourself, like the never-ending stream of little gadgets and metal items where everybody's just sitting there going, okay, are you done yet? That's probably my favorite.
Oh, I know Dorina still had more hidden somewhere.
Oh, honey, there were still some they never found, and I'm not going to tell you what they were.
Yeah, that scene and the scene where after, what was it, the scene on the planet where you've investigated the body of the dead Drazi, and then Tony Todd is yelling after you, hey, lady, there are no secret pouches on my body!
I forgot about that. That was funny. He was so much fun to work with.
How was that working with him? Because he's a very tall man.
Well, everybody's very tall compared to me. And the thing that was hilarious about Crusade, like if you look at our cast photo, it's like you're looking and everyone's on the same, because Margene is 6 feet without shoes on, okay? So you look, everyone's on the same level, and oh, there's a space. And then you look down really far and like, oh, there's Carrie's head. And then you go back up and look at the rest of the cast. I mean, it was just constantly looking up at people. Working with Tony Todd was amazing because he is this big guy. Not only is he a big guy, but he's got that wonderful voice. And he can be scary. And he was like the most gentle, fun guy ever. I think a lot of times sort of the big scary guys are not actually big and scary. I mean, he is the Candyman. I get that. He could still kill me. However, in this instance, he was quite gentle and lovely to work with. And Bruce, you know, Boxleitner was just amazing. Because most of my stuff was with the three of them, and it was just so much fun and pretty funny.
Did you have a favorite fellow cast member on Crusade? Someone that you seem to sync up with, not so much even acting, but just personally?
You know, I really dug everybody. It was an unusually wonderful ensemble. And by ensemble, I really mean ensemble. You know, there were no egos. There was no, my character's more important. There was no nothing. It was just an amazing group of people working together. So I would have to say, honestly, I loved working with all of them. You know, my character related more to some than others. But, and I'm not just saying this because it's 11 years later, honey, I can say whatever, right? So I'm not just saying this to say it, but it was a truly unique, unusual ensemble cast of great people. Really great people. Everyone was very generous, both on camera and off. And it was a little bit of magic there for a while, I must say. So there. Put that in your pipe and smoke it.
Speaking of fellow cast members, we were talking with Margene a few weeks ago, and she brought up the topic of Crusade babes.
Yeah. Whatever happened
to
those chicks?
I'd love to hear take that. Yeah.
I don't know. She said she would look around for them, but she thought you had some stuff too. And she was saying, you know, we have to go get that stuff and put it back out there for sale, because what we've done over the past, 6 years now, 5.5 years with this podcast, every week we still get people who are saying, I've never watched Babylon 5 before. I've just started watching it. I'm glad I found the series. I'm glad I found your podcast. I can't wait to get to ask you guys questions. So we have people coming to this new who never knew about Crusade Babes, because right now, CrusadeBabes.com right now is a Japanese porno site. So.
Well, of course it is. Margene and I would have gotten there eventually.
Oh, nice.
Oh, you've got to be kidding me. Do they have prosthetics? Oh, hello.
That's not safe for work, is it?
I did run across one of your t-shirts on the web, along with your top 10 spaceship regulations that you had.
Oh my gosh, I forgot that. We spent a lot of time on those regulations. They were
really
very important. That was on the back of the t-shirt.
Yes, it is, yeah.
How did that come about?
I have no idea. I think we were just trying to be a tad clever and went, we have to have something clever on the back of the t-shirt. And I don't even remember what they were. Do you?
Well, I'm not going to list them. I did pull it up, and I'm not going to list them all, but I'll just drop right down to number one. No sex in the bullet car.
That would be a little tricky.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Oh, you're killing me. Yeah, forgot about Crusade Babes.
If you have any Crusade Babe swag around, talk to me after. We can get those out to the fans.
But I certainly wish I did.
I'm sure that they'd line up to buy that stuff from you.
and if not, I can donate it to the Japanese porn site.
Now, are you, I believe Jason Davis recently interviewed you for the Crusade books that are coming out.
He did.
Did he tell you about all the stuff they dug up for Crusade?
No. I mean, he sent me two scripts that we actually talked about that were slated already to direct, you know, with director and whatever, that were fabulous that I read. But no, what other stuff did he get?
Well, he's been teasing me for months about how much Crusade stuff they found that they haven't told anybody about yet until the
wait a minute, wait a minute. What, did they find it in some secret crypt?
They did. They
yes,
went
a
back,
storage unit.
Yeah, they went back to a storage unit to look for more Crusade-related documents, and
you're
they
kidding.
Found this treasure trove of stuff nobody ever knew existed. I mean, there was
oh,
a, they found
it.
They found an episode, a script for an episode that had been written by Peter Woodward that had actually been slated for production.
You're kidding.
No. And
who knew? See, no one tells me anything. Can I just say, no one tells me anything.
So
there's no justice.
So he's been teasing me the past 20 minutes in the chat room that you're looking at there, saying, oh, she was going to get a whole lot more than a sword. Read the book. I'm like, yeah, I don't have the book yet.
Do I need to go back to the Japanese side? I mean, what am I getting here?
If you go to b5books.com, you'll see Crusade, Other Voices, Volume 1 and Volume 2, and some other Crusade books that have a ton of stuff in there. And, you know, I think, you know, Jason should, like, be really nice and just send it to you.
Maybe. Oh, no, he is sending me a book.
Oh, awesome. So you're
he
so
sent
you're
me
see
two
them.
Great stories. Did he talk to you about those?
Again, he's the teasing. It's with the teasing.
Yeah, it's the tried and true and war story. Did he send you? Did you guys read those scripts?
Those are coming up. Those are in the book that just came out today. So I don't have that
yeah,
yet.
They're fantastic. They are fantastic. And I know. Especially tried and true is amazing. And it was sort of me and Mafik. Do you remember Mafik? He was sort of my mentor.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
it's pretty much a two person 1 hour piece. And it's fantastic. I know. And then in the other one, all sorts of good stuff happens. I don't know if I should give it away, but they're really great scripts, and it's quite a shame that we did not get to make those. And one of the things that I was talking to him about that I thought was so fascinating about Mafik is that she has no history with, Darina has no history with anybody in the show at all. And Mafik is the first person that you would see her with where she has a history, which is a whole different way of relating to another person that she never had. You know what I mean by that?
Yeah.
You're like, yes, I speak English. I think I understand
no,
what
no,
you mean it, by
it,
that.
It's, no, it's like this new person comes in. She's just started building a history with the crew, and none of them knew her before this assignment. And then all of
and
a sudden,
nobody she would meet would she have a history with either until this guy. Pretty much. I thought that was pretty cool. I mean, you know, this goes back to when she was like 17.
I'm just imagining the different character dynamics that could set up.
Oh, yeah. Really cool. Like, what do you do when you meet the master, but the master is not your master anymore, and how that status and dynamics change. And, you know, I think it really shows how she's grown as can I say a person? As a person.
Yeah.
From when she was under his tutelage to sort of everything she's learned and grown with through her experience with everybody on the ship. And it's just, it would have been so cool. Plus, it says in the description that he's very striking and very handsome. So, hello, what could be bad there?
Bonus.
A little bonus, a little something.
As long as you approve guests, right?
Well, you know, we could have a perk. Perks aren't bad. I you know, they cast so well, I'd be happy to work with anyone that they pick. I mean, that's sort of one of the things they did so well, I think. Every guest star we had, every co-star we had, everybody who came on the show was sort of perfect. You know.
I got you. I had a little question.
No, what? What's your question?
Oh, no, I had a question. It's a little bit of a geeky thing, but then I think a lot of the listeners are, you know, fellow geeks. What did you think of the theme music for Crusade? Evan Chen was the, I guess, the composer of it, as opposed to the Christopher Franke music from Babylon 5 from the series. Did you ever have a chance to listen to any of it, or what did you think?
I liked it.
With the opening scene?
I liked it. I thought it was great. I thought it was a little dark, and I thought that was sort of right for the show. What did you think?
I still cared for Franke's music in general. I had a hard time getting into Chen. Even the opening wasn't so bad, but intermixed with the actual episodes, I always seem to have a hard time with it.
Now, do you think that's partly because of what you had grown used to and what you loved, as opposed to one of the things I loved about it was that it was so different. And I think anytime you do a spin-off series and you're trying to find your own identity, so sometimes sort of really going in a different direction is helpful in that way because you're breaking the mold of expectation. Helpful and can be harmful. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's very tricky to do a spinoff.
Yeah, I understand.
From a show where everybody loves, you know. Yeah, Babylon. Yeah. I loved Babylon, as did everybody.
Yeah, I completely understand the desire to create a theme that wasn't just a pale copy of the original. And I think, like I said, out of all the hosts here, I think I'm the only one who actually really likes what Evan Chen did. The theme I thought was perfect because it makes you feel like you're questioning everything around you. And that's actually
exactly
the theme of the series. There are some battle sequences where the music doesn't quite enhance the action, but there are intense scenes of intrigue and mystery where it works perfectly. And
yeah, I have to say I liked it.
And then there's always the Pak Mara porn scene with oh my god, that music cracks me up every time I think about it.
You know, it's so different being the difference between being on Babylon 5 as my smaller parts and then getting to be, you know, coming back on A Call to Arms sort of as a featured, you know, sort of big role and then moving on with Crusade. I got to say, everyone on Babylon 5 was very welcoming and very generous to, you know, guest stars and co-stars that came on. And I think people on Crusade were as well. And I think that goes back to the sensibility that was created about the show from the people who created the show and worked on the show. So I think in that sense, you know, that was very similar to Crusade. You know, they were any guest star. It's very hard to go on a show as a guest star or a co-star because you're pretty much a guest at someone else's family and you're just there for like breakfast or you're just there for dessert and then like you're gone. So it's a very, it can be very awkward. And how the series regulars sort of embrace or not embrace you sort of tell a lot, I think, about the show and about how you're going to do in it, you know. And the team that Joe and John Copeland and all those guys created in front and behind the camera really were very welcoming and very warm. And I think that was also unusual in this town. And I don't know why that is, but it was very unusual. I think that's a common occurrence.
Now, have you had a lot of interaction with Babylon 5 fans after the series ended?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I did a lot of the conventions for a couple of years, and I, you know, my site isn't up anymore. My carriedover.com email doesn't work. I'm not quite sure why. I don't think it's worked for like 3 years, so I'm not really getting much, you know, personal interaction, but yeah, I love sci-fi fans. I think they're the absolute committed, driven, supportive. We couldn't do it without them. I mean, sci-fi fans are amazing, and they support a show in such a way that they can keep a show on. That they have. It's the most unusual relationship. I mean, you have lots of sci-fi conventions. I don't see lots of, oh, let's have an office convention or let's have, you know, a soap opera convention. It's a very wonderful and magical kind of group of people. I don't care, nerds, not nerds. I'm a sci-fi fan too. I've done probably, how much sci-fi? I'm doing a sci-fi audio series now. Did you know that?
No, you're going to have to tell us about that.
I do Blake 7. You know what that
Ooh.
Is?
Ooh,
yeah.
So, so I've been over to England twice. It's I've done a few of them, and sci-fi is great. Sci-fi is probably my most favorite genre. because there are no limitations, because there are no expectations, and anything is possible. Well, where else do you have that? You know, there are no limits. You can't say we can't do that because it's the future. It's an alternate universe or world. We can do anything. Well, how creative is that? How cool is that? How much fun is that? I don't think it gets better than that.
Yeah. So what else are you working on these days?
Well, I'm producing full time. So between going to England once a year and doing the Blake 7 and producing full time, you know, I have 15-hour days. So that's pretty much all I have time to do right now. And I love it, and it's great.
Cool, because I don't know if you knew, but yesterday, JMS finally launched his official Twitter account. And that reminded me that you haven't been on Twitter in about 2 years. I was going to ask you about that.
I haven't been on what?
Twitter. Your Twitter.
Yeah, I don't really get the whole Twitter thing. I just don't get it. Okay, so I used to make, you might not want to know this either, but I used to make fun of my niece because she would be texting on the phone while she was on Facebook leaving a message while she was on the computer sending an email. And I'd be like, okay, that's just like insane. And now I'm doing the same thing. But I just don't get the Twitter. I don't think you care if I'm going to have a snack.
Well, no, you don't say you're going to have a snack. You're going to say, hey, I'm going to be recording some Blake 7 episodes in London next week. You know, who wants to say hi? You know, promote the stuff you're working on, saying, hey, Blake 7 audio comes out this week. This short film that I'm working on, you can go see it here. It's just great for letting people know really quickly what stuff you're
What's your point?
About.
What's your point? Are you saying I need to get a Twitter thing? Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm just saying that I followed, you know, Carrie Dobro from Twitter, and I haven't seen any tweets from you, and yet I've tweeted with Pat Talbin quite frequently.
Because I don't have a Twitter account. I don't know how to do it.
Okay, we can.
It's like a pimp without the hat.
Wow, that's a great image. I'm going to have to remember that one.
Okay. All right, we'll hang on after this. We'll talk.
Okay, we'll talk.
We'll talk. Okay. We'll talk. All right, but thank you so much for being with us today, sharing your...
Oh, no, thank you. This was so much fun.
Awesome. And we will be back with a little bit more Babylon Podcast right after this.
Groovy.
Bye.
He rolls 20 every time. He laid out plans for man to reach Mars and return safely on a cocktail napkin. The next day, it was approved. He always knows where his towel is. He is the most interesting geek in the world.
I don't always listen to podcasts, but when I do, I listen to Technorama. Stay geeky, my friend.
And that will actually do it.
Oh, that was a lot of fun. I knew I was going to enjoy it, but I didn't think she was going to be as carefree and honest about some of her thoughts. It was really, really fun to listen to her describe some of the stuff.
I would have loved to have seen some of the notes on. Yeah, she's going to have sex on every planet.
Well, as she was talking about her painted on suit, I was like, oh, was that Doreena's chastity belt?
Oh my goodness. No, I always wondered, it's like, is that painted on? Is that real leather? How does she do those stunts in that suit?
Three people. That's the answer, yeah.
But yeah, no, she's always fun. I am really glad I stuck to my guns and tracked her down. It took a month and a half, but yeah.
Oh no, you did great work, Summer. Not to pat you on the back too hard, but yeah, no, I'm glad you got her. It was really fun to speak with her and interact with her. And she answered, as I was telling Carrie as well, she answered a lot of questions that I had, especially with the whole Hypernauts thing. I always thought it was a bit more of an incestuous relationship with Babylon 5, like given all the B5 people involved. But she cleared that up, that no, it wasn't. It was pretty standalone. So that was my big question that I wanted to find out this time around.
And I never saw Hypernauts. I'm not even sure what channel it would have been on.
It was on ABC. It was actually like a Tuesday morning live action show. It ran. It was like about a half hour show, including commercials. And I didn't actually see it on ABC either. I saw it later. They actually ran it on the Disney Channel for a while, and that's where I caught it.
Wait, so it was a morning show?
Yes.
How did – I don't – really?
Well, a lot of these people were involved with cartoons. JMS himself, you know, did Ghostbusters and things of that nature. And so, and Captain Power, you know, these were, you know, kids shows to some extent. And yeah, so yeah, it was.
But a Tuesday morning instead of a Saturday morning?
No, Saturday morning. Saturday morning.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Cause Saturday morning, I might have seen the listings of it, but I don't know.
It didn't last long. It was pulled after like 8 episodes. You didn't end up seeing the whole run till it made Disney. So
okay.
So no, it was one of those blink of the eye things that any B5 completist might have run across at some point.
Well, if it ever shows up in reruns on Disney Channel again, I'll check it out. Or ABC Family, I guess, would be running it these days. Maybe Cartoon True. Network, somebody like that. Well. That's all we have for today. I will let people know that we have a couple more special treats for you coming up before we get to the end of talking about Crusade and after. And I will do my own teasing. How about that?
Oh, I'm getting it from every end anymore. First the Scripps team and now Summer herself. Jason, you're teaching her too well. Please stop.
Just letting people know that they have reason to tune in at least through September. At the very least. We could go longer. Don't know yet.
Tim can easily extend it for months. I'm not worried.
Tim is making plans to either do a Lensman podcast or a Doctor Who podcast. I'm not sure which.
It's open for the TOS podcast. Oh, well.
That's always an option. That is definitely an option with him and Brett. Gee, wow. That's a lot of talking. Well, we'll see. We'll see how it breaks down. But yeah, we're going to have a fun summer of special surprises for the rest of our Babylon 5 analyzation and dissection and discussion.
Well, yeah, we still have the books to hit. There's, people are always running across different little memorabilia things. I think we still got a fair run to go.
Oh, yeah. We have plenty of stuff to cover, but I'm looking for extra stuff, too. And that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. So, as always, the website is babylonpodcast.com. Come on by. Leave your comments on some of the other discussions we're starting up. Always hit the donate button because summertime is coming and probably by June we'll be up to 110 degrees and Mike needs to keep that equipment cool. Watch the video feed. You'll see how much stuff is in there. We have to keep that stuff cool, man. Farpointforums.com, that's where our bulletin boards are along with the bulletin boards for some other fine Farpoint Media Entertainment programs. And...
oh, and if you want to get through to the voicemail in between my calls and Neil's, please feel free to call us at 206-338-2259. That's 206-338-2259. The year I got to talk on the show instead of leave voicemail.
And as always, we'll see you next time on the other side of the gate.